Welcome to Acorn to Oak with Penny Quayle Pierce and co-host Matthew Donaghy. Within each acorn, there is the DNA that strives to be a mighty oak tree. All it needs to reach its potential for greatness is to be activated. You are the acorn. On this show, we will share with you the tools and guidance you need to grow into the person you are meant to be. And now your host, Penny Quayle Pierce and co-host Matthew Donaghy.
So, hi, good evening. I hope you're all well. Good evening, good afternoon. I just have to state quite plainly at the beginning, I'm suffering from one of these really annoying summer colds. So if I sneeze, hopefully you won't get the bugs. But there you go. Handing over to Matthew just to say hi.
Good evening, everybody, or good afternoon, whatever continent you're on. Really looking forward to tonight's show. I hope you enjoyed the last one. We're just going to expand on that slightly.
Yeah, I think it's been really encouraging for us to get so many questions and people leaving comments for us. So thank you very much, and keep on bringing those to us, because that also shows us that people are listening. So, you know, we're not spending an hour just sucking our thumbs. So that's really great. So basically, to kick off, I had a few questions around the emotional intelligence that we were talking about last week. And people just basically wanting us to look at MAD, because they found that the MAD emotion was the one that they were having most questions. They wanted more clarification, and really just looking at it was interesting that people were looking at bored and depressed as things that they would like us to explain more about. When you look at bored and the emotion bored, you know, why it is categorized in the MAD section of, you know, the four emotions that we talk about, MAD, sad, glad, scared. Bored is in MAD, in the MAD emotion, because people get bored because they haven't got something interesting to do. They're bored with the TV. They're bored with, you know, some of the things that are going on in their life. They want something that's more meaningful and exciting to, you know, and not exciting as in necessarily adrenaline buzzes or dangerous sports, but things that actually they can connect with. And they can be present with. And, you know, some of the conversations that I was having during the week was very much about, you know, someone rang me about a teenager who basically everything that came out of their mouth was on board. You know, teenagers speak in a certain way, don't they? They, you know, I'm bored, I've got nothing to do. I'm just... Yeah, I'm just fed up. I don't know if you have teenagers speaking in that way necessarily in the USA, but they're real classics, and we have a whole comedy series around bothered. Do I look bothered? You know, I mean, all of this type of stuff, and it's because they just haven't found something that makes them passionate and excited. You know, I also come across quite a few teenagers who are incredibly motivated, and they know, you know, they like their football, or they like their sports, or they're into canoeing or surfing or whatever it is that they're really interested in. And they can't wait to get up in the morning. And they really engage first thing in the morning. I've got a 2-year-old who engages at 6 o'clock in the morning and goes all day. But, you know, sometimes teenagers, that's the first thing that they actually talk about. You know, if they come to me for a session or whatever, it's very much about how to motivate them into finding what they enjoy. So, as I said, bored is an emotion that is very much, you know, we tend to equate it with teenagers. We tend to equate it with people who are not necessarily emotionally mature as an adult.
Absolutely.
So it's, yeah, handing over to Matthew. Absolutely, he says.
I think a certain amount of that is looking at different generations. What came to mind for me when you were explaining that is when I look after my niece and nephew, they're 5 and 9. And they're very much of the age where they're in the technical side of things. So a lot of children, if they haven't got an iPad in their hands or they're watching TV, they'll say, "Oh, I'm bored. Oh, we've got nothing to do." And what you realise is you get different generations get used to different things. So very much like the younger generations, if they haven't got an iPad or some kind of game in their hand, they're bored. But I think back to my generation, and we were never at home. Yes, we had games machines and computers and that sort of thing, but they were very, very basic back then. And the way that we used to engage, if we weren't climbing trees, we'd be out in the woods discovering, making jumps for our bikes and scooters and whatnot. And what I found with my niece and nephew is if they turn around and said, "Oh, I'm bored," all you really have to do is ignite their imagination. And that can be going out into the garden, lifting up a few rocks, finding a few bugs, explaining to them about sort of life and what it might be like to be an ant. And what I found is they almost get bored of you being there as soon as they engage that imagination. So a stick to a child could be a sword, it could be one of many things. And I found, especially as an uncle, it's just engaging their imagination. And as soon as you do that, they'll be off for hours, absolutely hours, fully indulged in what they're doing. And don't even think about the computers or films or whatever it is. So I think it's almost like a pattern of behaviour we get stuck in. Very much like you were saying with TV, I think a lot of adults get stuck in watching TV and then complain because their life's boring. And it's sort of like, well, if you made the decision to go outside and turn the TV off, then you wouldn't be bored. So it can be patterns that we create in our own life that cause that boredom. And I think TV is a very big one.
I think it is. I agree with what you say, Matthew. I really do. But you know, obviously, the TV has its place, and you know, for people who are maybe living on their own or who are lonely, you know, the TV can be a huge lifesaver. However, it's really quite amazing, you know, whenever I'm out and about, because I listen to other people's conversations, and when they actually start talking about characters on soaps, and they feel like they have a personal relationship with them, and I just look at that and I go, wow, you know, that they haven't got, you know, and it's lonely people and people. So when I was looking at Mad again, I was actually looking at where I would put lonely. And lonely, yes, can be sad, but it can also be scared, but it also can be in Mad, you know? Loneliness, it's because we're mad that we haven't got people in our lives. It may well be through our own fault, or it may be through loss or trauma or whatever it is. But, you know, when I look at loneliness and I look in the UK, and I'm sure it's the same in the USA, how many people, you know, get to the end of their lives and they are lonely and alone. And, you know, they get angry that there's nobody there for them anymore. You know, they may have outlived, you know, their generation or whatever it is. But also, you know, I also know some real people who live alone but are not lonely, because they're constantly looking for different things to get involved in. You know, I have a couple of older clients who, you know, they're very, very up on their social media. They're joining groups. They're not as mobile as they used to be, but they're, you know, they're making efforts to actually do that. So it was really quite interesting when I was reviewing for tonight, just where, you know, lonely is for me. And, I, you know, some of it is definitely in the mad category. So, you know, those two, it seems, you know, talking about extreme, you know, end of scale, you know, the youngsters and the elder people, you know, in the middle of our lives, yeah, we're so busy we don't have time to turn around, because we're, you know, we've either got, you know, responsibilities with families, or we've got, you know, a career going, or, you know, we're very, very busy, so we don't get time to get lonely. Although when we do, yeah, sit down and think about it, and maybe think about our lifestyles, we do just go, yeah, I wish I had a slightly bigger group of people around me. So again, it's just looking at that. And the other, obviously, the other big one that we've had quite a few questions around, is what do you mean by depressed is actually angry? And maybe it would be good, as we go on, to explain that, you know, one of the reasons that, again, people sometimes go into depression is because they've never been allowed to actually express how angry they are. And sure, in order to deal with that emotion, they turn it within, because it's never been safe to be angry. You know, it may be something in their upbringing. It may be, you know, again, they've been part of the military or whatever it is, but it's never been safe to be angry or express anger. So they turn it within and they suppress it so hard that they become numb. And when we were talking last week about red rage and icy cold blue rage, and this is the, you know, sometimes the depression is the icy cold blue rage. And in that, it becomes, you know, we get diagnosed with either depression, or it can be driven even deeper, where people come up with pathologies like MS and ME, because it's never actually been safe for them to say boo to a goose.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's real, real difficult stuff. But when you start peeling that back, and I wanted to give Matthew a chance to talk about one of the concepts that he endorses, which are rage rooms. So did you want to talk a little bit about that, Matthew?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm assuming it's a global thing, with Mental Health Awareness Week being this week. And it's really interesting. I've been looking at writing a program, and I run a class called Rage Rooms. And it's a place where men and women, predominantly at the moment it is men, can go and express their anger and their rage in any way that feels natural to them. And this, it can be, you find all sorts of people are very different. Sort of, a lot of people have got a lot of suppressed rage and anger around their childhood, because very much like Penny said, we don't have a safe place where we can go and express our anger and have a good shout and have a good rant about the things that really wind us up, because everybody has things that wind them up. The thing is, we're not taught emotional intelligence when we're young children, And we're told that actually, if we're over emotional, so if someone gets angry, they're automatically made wrong. So very much like you said, people suppress their anger. Now in a rage room, I use a tool, Breath for Life breath work as well, but it's a safe space where people can go and express that anger without fear of judgment, without fear of almost judging self. And I've made a connection with football, because funnily enough, if you go to a football match on a Sunday afternoon, the language you would hear is extreme, and everybody has a problem with a referee. But it's an environment where you can go and shout and say anything, and everybody's doing the same thing. So a lot of people cope by going to football matches and shouting out their frustrations at one referee that they've had during the week. So it's something that I've experienced in my own life a lot of suppressed anger. And people are sort of saying, oh, why is rage rooms not bigger? Why aren't we told that it's safe to be angry? And I'm not saying it's necessarily always appropriate sort of in a supermarket or out in public. But if we did express our emotions a lot more, we wouldn't be suppressing them and they wouldn't be coming up. If you take a fight, for instance, you've got two guys that happen to have bumped into each other. Now, they end up in a full-on fist fight and beat the living daylights out of each other. And if you ask them afterwards what happened, they would tell you, actually, in that moment, I don't know. I just saw red. The anger overtook me. And if you ask them afterwards, was your behaviour relevant or on the same level for the situation? And they would say, no, I actually feel really guilty because all that happened was we bumped into each other and didn't apologise. And because the other one didn't apologise, the other one got upset. And the next thing, they're knocking 10 barrels out of each other. And they would turn around and say, in that moment, I completely lost it. And it was way out of kilter with the situation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really quite interesting. And we'll see you on the other side of the break.
Brilliant.
Enjoy.
Great, thank you.
Conscious connection to a more mindful world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibilities, knowing you are supported by the universe.
We are talking about your life. Ever wonder, is this as good as it gets? No, it could be so much better. At Acorn to Oak, we know you are seeking more happiness, joy, unconditional love, financial freedom, passion, and purpose. Find your unique mojo and live an extraordinary life. Want to know more? Contact us at our website, acorntooak.org.uk.
1 in 3 adults has prediabetes. 1 in 3. That means it could be you, your football buddy, your football buddy, or you, your best man. your worst man. You, your dog walker, your cat jogger. While one in three adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Hi, so just before the break, we were beginning to talk about depression and how, you know, depression is anger turned within because it's never been safe to feel it or to express it. And that may be within our families, within our society, within our culture. But it's really quite interesting because some cultures do have rage rooms in native cultures. They have a hut set aside for you to go in and express whatever it is that you need to express, dump it and move on. It's when we suppress it and we think we should be more than this person who is depressed. And then we start reiterating that we should be better than we are. We shouldn't be depressed. Look at the life that I've got. I've got a beautiful family. I've got an amazing kids. I've got a life. But I feel depressed and sad and numb most of the time. Mm-hmm. And that could happen, you know, for medical reasons. It could happen after a birth, you know, post-natal depression. It's all sorts of different ways of when we feel disconnected to what our authentic self is. And when we are disconnected like that, you know, we go, I mean, I talk about divine disconnection. Sometimes, you know, because we're looking for something that's bigger than us, that will inspire us, and we have disconnected from our authentic self. And it's, you know, a lot of the work that I do, and I know is done at Acorn to Oak in many different ways, is helping people reconnect and unnumb themselves from being on survival mode so they can go on to thrive mode and be connected again. But there's so much, and in the UK right here, you know, as Matthew was mentioning, it's Mental Health Week, and there are so many people who suffer from depression in one way or another. But, you know, orthodoxy just haven't got their heads around it and will suppress it even more with chemical drugs or, you know, or throwing concrete onto a swamp by, you know, just, you know, people, happy pills, we used to call them happy pills in my day, where people are, you know, just giving them out like Smarties instead of actually looking, you know, don't numb the symptom, but look at the core, you know, the core conflict or what is actually going on for them to feel so disconnected. So, you know, depression is a mad emotion. You know, it comes just around about rage and enraged. And unfortunately, orthodoxy has not been treating it in an intelligent fashion. So it's looking at, and you know, if you know anybody who suffers from depression, is just getting them to some help that realizes that depression is usually triggered, you know, what will help is for them to deal with their mad emotions. Look at, you know, are they apathetic, ambivalent, impatient, displeased, indignant, bored, peeved, irritated, incensed, angry, furious, and then you get down to the depressed and the rage and the enraged. And it's it's really, you know, one of the most amazing honours I have in my life is I take people on retreats and we do what we call rage mountains, where, you know, we've had a few different men turning up and saying, well, no, I never get angry. And you just look at it and go, uh-huh, that's interesting. If somebody is that divorced from their anger, this is going to be an interesting situation where we just pile up a whole bunch of pillows and cushions and everything else. And I can remember being in a classroom where one particular gentleman basically had said he doesn't get angry, and watching him finally go, it was absolutely astonishing. And the energy that is created when someone is actually moving through anger into passion and then from passion to drive is just astonishing, and it is amazing to watch. And he did a fantastic dive onto these pillows, you know, his whole body lifted off, and it was just astonishing to see him get in touch with that passion again. And, you know, that's it. You know, his life changed in that moment of connecting with that passion, connecting and allowing the anger just to be burnt off in the action that he was taking. And it was superb. It was absolutely superb. You know, as a woman, I'm often asked, you know, Penny, the work you do, you get down in there and you get dirty, you know, dirty in humanity. And I go, yeah, it's fantastic because it's real. And and they say, well, don't you ever get scared? And I go, no, I never get scared. I find it thrilling whenever I see somebody going and becoming so into their authentic self. I rejoice. It's absolutely fantastic. And I know Matthew's probably got a few things that he would like to say around this, because he's watched some of this too. And it is awesome.
Yeah, that course really does stick out in my mind. And it really is quite amazing to watch when somebody goes through a process like that. I think it's important to remember that anger, there's always a flip side to an emotion, and the flip side to anger is passion. And we've had a lot of people in that sort of say, right, I want to get rid of this anger because it's taking over my life. And we sort of say, whoa, you don't want to get rid of that energy. What you want to do is raise the vibration of that anger and then reintegrate it within yourself to come out as passion. And it's why I have such a passion for the work I do today, because I was in that situation once. So I totally get it from the inside out. And it is amazing just how many people won't allow themselves to go there, because fear of judging self, fear of other people judging them. But what the important thing to remember is that's what got them to where they are now. So a lot of people that have suffered with depression and that sort of thing, when you go to the doctor, and very much like Penny said, you get happy pills. They're not happy pills. They will suppress all your emotions. So yes, you may not feel overwhelmed with sad, or in extreme cases, sort of feelings of suicide or that sort of thing. But you don't feel the joy either. They're numbing. Almost, I'd like to call them zombie pills, because I've seen people in my life take them and use them for long periods of time, and it does just numb them out. So very much like orthodox medicine, is trying its best. And for a lot of people, I can guarantee they would turn around and say, without those pills, they wouldn't have survived as long as they had. But very much what we look to do is we look at the symptoms and then work backwards, because ultimately the way to a cure is to find the root cause. So that's where we sort of work back, and it's allowing people to go on that journey of self-discovery, to delve in and see, where did this start? Where did I start suppressing this large amount of emotions? And it goes back to childhood. Very much little, we have a saying in the UK, and it's little girls don't get angry. And if I had a pound for every time I'd heard that expression, I'd probably be a billionaire right now. And with young men, it's boys don't cry, man up. And so automatically we're telling our children to suppress their emotions. And they do it just as much with joy as they do with sadness. Obviously you have the children should be heard and not seen and not heard, which is basically telling our children to sit down and shut up because we're not interested in what you have to say. That's often where the... Sorry, go on, Penny.
Yeah, or their emotions make the adults feel uncomfortable. That's the other part.
Yes.
It's you know, pacifying a child so that we don't have to feel the sadness or the grief or the anger or the fear that they're feeling. It's like, you know, please don't bring that to me. My plate is already too full.
Yes.
And one of the things that Matthew was saying was, you know, one of the things that when we suppress our feelings, whether it's mad or sad or scared, you know, with chemical drugs or anything else, you know, we're suppressing our ability to love. We're suppressing our ability to be happy. We're suppressing our ability to be present for the rest of humanity. And, you know, sometimes when I have a good old rant, I go, you know, don't people realize when they suppress themselves, they're not allowing their genius to shine? And, you know, if everybody allowed their genius to shine, boy, oh boy, would we not be living in an interesting world? You wouldn't get bored. No one would get bored because it would be absolutely, you know, the characters, the geniuses, the amazing creativity that would be in the world right here, right now, if we didn't suppress our ability to love. If we didn't suppress our ability to love, there would be no war, there would be no starving, there would be no nothing, because we would be loving each other enough to take care of each other. You know, yeah. I was writing something earlier today. I'm just completing an ebook, and I was writing something today, and I trained as a registered sick children's nurse at Great Ormond Street Hospital for Sick Children in London. And their motto was basically the children first and always. And I was reminded of that again, and I went, you know, because I was talking about, you know, we bring our values and our beliefs and our moral code, and as an adult, we work with it, and then we put it into our, what I call the bottom line. We put it into our bottom line, which is, you know, our bottom line is where we keep all of our, the things that we keep sacrosanct in our life. And if something comes into our lives and it's not congruent with our bottom line, then you just reject it. It's not for us, because it means it doesn't resonate with us. It has no energy for us. So, you know, one of the things I was actually talking about when I was finishing this chapter was very much about, you know, looking at what is in your bottom line. And our job as adults and encouraging our teenagers to do is to look at all of the things that they've been given during their first part of their lives. And actually, do they believe in it? is it one of their values, or was it an inherited value that was given to them by their parents? And if it was an inherited value, does it make sense to them now? Do they want to keep it in their bottom line, or is it time to reject it? And, you know, I grew up, you know, I'm nearly 60 now. Woo! I can't believe it. I grew up, obviously, you know, I was born in 1960, and therefore, you know, I was brought up in the 60s and the 70s, and obviously as a young adult in the 80s. And you just look at it and you look at some of the things that we had, you know, I had to go through when I was basically looking at my enculturation and what I needed to reject. And, you know, my father was very Victorian. He was a Spitfire pilot in the Second World War and fought in the Battle of Britain. And you look at it and just go, you know, somebody like that has a certain way of being. But it was no longer relevant for the 60s, the 70s and the 80s. You know, we had moved on. And but that didn't mean I didn't have some of the moral coding that he gave me. And I would never throw out, because moral courage to me is one of my outstanding values that I believe in 100%. So, you know, it's looking at what's in your bottom line, what makes sense to you. And if it's not something that you believe in now, then just throw it out, get rid of it, raise its vibration, do a breath work, anything just to move it on, because it's not who you are right here, right now. So I've had a bit of a rant
absolutely
there,
it's great to hear. I think one thing that's come up for me this week is, obviously with it being Mental Health Awareness Week, a lot of people have been reaching out, and I will continue this conversation after the break. So we'll continue after the break.
Thank you.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
We are talking about your life. Ever wonder, is this as good as it gets? No, it could be so much better. At Acorn to Oak, we know you are seeking more happiness, joy, unconditional love, financial freedom, passion, and purpose. Find your unique mojo and live an extraordinary life. Want to know more? Contact us at our website, acorntooak.org.uk.
Long ago, you wouldn't think of galloping on a horse while doing calligraphy, and you wouldn't have attempted to ride your bike while typing a letter. Yet you think you can safely operate a multi-ton vehicle while texting? Behind the wheel is no place to multitask. If you want to BRB, drive now and text later. Lives depend on it.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
So, hi, hello, we're back.
Welcome back. So I was just wanted to go into a lot of people have been contacting me this week and sort of reaching out, and I found one of the biggest reasons people don't reach out more is fear of being a burden on other people and fear of admitting that there's an issue. And I think the term mental illness, for me, I translate that to emotional imbalance, because I think for me it's a more realistic explanation. To say that someone's got something wrong with them around an emotion and so therefore they have a mental illness, it just doesn't resonate with me. So for me it's emotional imbalance, and I think one of the key points here is we have an emotional capacity. So there is only so many emotions that we can suppress, at which point we become full. So very much like Penny was saying earlier, and myself, where a guy will walk into somewhere, like say walk into a Starbucks, and he'll be told that they don't have his favourite drink. And he'll fly off the handle, he'll probably insult the cashier, insult the barista, and storm out. And when you look at their reaction in relevance to what they were told, it's completely out of balance. Sure, we all like to have our favourite things here and there, but really, does not having a coffee in the morning or your favourite coffee in the morning warrant you insulting somebody and making them feel bad? So we have a certain emotional capacity that we can, there's only so many emotions that we can hold and we can feel. And I think that's why the work we do at Acorn to Oak is so transformational in people's lives, because we're getting them to dig into those emotions and raise the vibration of them. And when you raise the vibration of all the sad, the mad, and the anger, you can flip them. And it gives you more room. So you can go from having 70% of your emotional capacity held up by anger to releasing 70% into passion. And even just flipping that, what you put out, you get back. And if you're walking around constantly angry, you will see it in other people. And that will be your life experience, because like attracts like. Whereas when you start dealing with the deep rooted emotions and raising the vibration of them, you gain more joy, you gain more passion. And therefore your life changes. You'll attract more people on that same vibration as you, and life does change. I very much explain my life experience. My life on earth was like a living hell at one point, whereas now I reside in heaven. And I think my view on heaven and hell is actually we're already here. It's just which one you're choosing to live in. And so the emotional capacity, I think, is what I've been getting across to people, because they said, oh, but I was really happy in my teenage years. But then all of a sudden, I had a rocky few years in my 20s. They may have married, had children, got divorced, and all of a sudden felt like their life had fallen apart. And we tell ourselves stories. We're very, very good at storytelling, and that is, I can do this on my own. I don't want to be a burden on anybody. And, oh, well, it's just not something I want to tell people because I'm embarrassed about it. And actually, by just opening up, we can gain so much. You'll often, if you ask somebody, you'll ask the people that don't seem okay, are you all right? Do you feel good? What we forget is the ones, I guarantee that if you look through your friends list on social media, you'll have friends on there that they look like they have a really glamorous lifestyle. and they look like they're exceptionally happy. Whereas actually they can be the ones that are in more trouble than anybody else. Something I used to do, I used to put on a mask. So people would say, oh, you're always really happy and this, that and the other. It was all an act, because I thought if I
am happy, the clown.
And I, if I try and be happy, then I can get through. I can do this on my own, which shows that we're looking at a far greater problem than we realise. And very much like Penny said, if people were more real and we opened up to people, you'd actually realise that we're all in the same boat. And I think this is why, not just this week with emotional, with the mental health week, but emotions and emotional well-being is very, it's almost like a buzzword at the moment. And it's because I believe as a global thing that we are reaching our emotional capacity, whereby people's behaviours are so extreme, we're now noticing it. Whereas the last 10, sort of 20 years, we haven't really noticed it. But with all the crime going up and young teenagers, we've got an issue over here at the moment, and there's a big program, Put Down Your Knife and Pick Up Your Bike, because a lot of children are involved in knife crime and that sort of thing. And when you look at the behavior, it's dog eat dog. Children are only carrying knives because they're scared that other children may be carrying knives. They don't know they are, but the fear is they are, so they carry them. And you look at the emotional side of it, and it's like as a global problem, we're emotionally, we're full. And we're concentrating, we've been concentrating on things that really don't matter. Which is why there's such a big divide between the millennials and the older generations, because neither are spending enough time with each other to understand the differences. And I kind of have to stick up for the millennials on this one. I mean, you look at all the work they're doing with around the environment, so looking after the world. These are young children that are looking at the adults, and our lives aren't working and our systems aren't working, yet we're telling them they're the problem. And
yeah,
we need to
it's
listen
important.
To them. And
we do need to listen to them. I couldn't agree with you more. But also it's interesting to pick up at the point where Matthew's talking about where emotional capacity. You know, I talk about emotions, you know, the four emotions, mad, sad, glad, scared. And I look at, you know, our capacity is like a big tank or a bucket. And over time, those buckets become full, to the stage where they're just about to overflow. And then we start trying to put some more suppression in there. And what actually happens is, when you're trying to put some more suppression into an already filled capacity, you get, you get a leak coming off the side. And in that leakage, you know, that's when we act out behavior rather than being able to contain it. That's why we have, you know, the terrorist situations that we have in the world, because, you know, they're full. They're completely full, and then they spill out an emotion, and they act out that emotion rather than being able to contain it. And when you're having a whole bunch of fanatics winding up another whole bunch of fanatics, it gets out of hand very, very quickly. But you do look at it, and you do look at the world, and I always look at the world, and I see the absolute amazing things that are going on in it, as well as the chaos. And, you know, when we look at chaos, we're looking at a word we use, which is called perturbation. And that's when it's all being shaken up. And we will evolve from this. And this is the most important thing to remember, is there will be evolution. in the next few years where we all start realizing that unless we help each other and unless we are each other's best friend, you know, we're going to sink. You know, those, unfortunately, the people who cannot open up and embrace a new way of being will sink into more depression and disharmony. And the people who are living, as Matthew mentioned, in heaven are there to help the people who are having an experience of hell. And it's our responsibility. It's good old Eastern word or Sanskrit word is, it's our dharma, it's our spiritual duty to hold out a hand of friendship to the people who need it. And it's our duty to love people who feel that they cannot be loved. And it is our duty to encourage people to take the next steps. And these are really important things. I just wanted to mention something else because I love this word. And in the list was peeved. And I would look at peeved and go, what's peeved all about? You know, I can't even begin to understand the word. And somebody quite rightly turned around to me and said, that's what you call a mean angry bitch. They're peeved all the time. And I just went, oh, right, okay. Oh, right, yeah. I understand that one. You mean it's all, you know, especially when people are laughing. Yeah, and the guys will probably just look at me sideways. But it's when you're premenstrual and you go into that mean, angry bitch. And it is only chocolate that's going to get you through it. It's remembering to take ourselves. These are really important concepts. There is real serious stuff, but there's no harm in having a bit of a tongue in cheek and a little bit of fun, realizing that it's life is life. You know, we're here, it's a game. You know, we should play it full out as much as we possibly can and not let fear, which is, you know, false evidence appearing real. Don't allow fear to govern your life. Always just go, right, okay. Yeah, it's real important for me. You know, I've spent an awful lot of time in hospital situations, working with clients, all this, that, and the other. And, you know, one of the things that allows me to stay in patience, in being patient with people, is to know that they're but the grace of God go I. You know, whatever experience that they're having, you know, it is only my belief in my authentic self and my inner divinity that makes me have the patience or to be able to listen to somebody for 3 hours to help them negotiate their depression or negotiate their emotional intelligence. And yes, you know, sometimes I laugh and I think maybe I should just tape my next client and then I could just play it back to the next client because I seem to be reiterating yeah. an awful lot of the same stuff. But I love this stuff. I know it works. It has amazing results. You know, emotional intelligence is one of the bedrocks that we should really, you know, again, more and more schools are allowing more emotional intelligence into it. It's something I wish I had learned really early on in my life to make me have a pole star in my life. Where I could go, yeah, okay, fair enough. Emotions are here to be felt. They should be, it's energy in motion. They should come out. You should look at it and go, that's interesting, and let them go. The trouble is yeah. when we get e-stuck and we get stuck in the emotion and nobody is there to help us or to guide us how we can shift it on. And that's when it gets really painful. For people. And, you know, part of our jobs at Acorn to Oak is to try and get this message out to as many people as possible, is you don't have to stay in pain. You don't have to be in suffering. You know, things can shift really, really quickly if you allow yourself to do that. And I'll give Matthew, 1 minute to finish off here.
Yeah, very much so. I think as human beings, when you look at wants and needs, if you write your wants down on one page, you probably have 100. Whereas if you write your needs down, actually, we need to feel loved. We need to feel as though we're part of something. And we are very complex, but also very simple. Our brains make things complicated, but our hearts make it real simple. And I think if we all had a little bit more compassion for each other and really connected with that heart, emotional intelligence, very much like Penny said, life would be a better place. We overcomplicate things and we make things personal. The truth is, we're all pink inside. We all feel the same.
So have a really great week, and we will see you next week. I hope you've enjoyed the show.
Yeah, thanks for listening. It's been a great show. Thank you.